Good evening, James McKenney with My Science Hour. This is for March 12th, 2020. And first a note, there's been heavy ordering on the water filter products lately and other products as well. So let me just be clear about something. We take in orders and we ship them in the order received. And the factory is busy not only producing your materials, but those of other people. And so what we do is we take the orders, we process the orders in the order that they come in. Lead times are growing. So please don't be a nervous customer. And so we had to install a new policy here because I process with PayPal. What happens, and also if you process, and this is not just for me, this is for literally everybody else out there, whether they're selling water filters or like I sell Numana food, etc. The Numana food orders right now, this across the board, are out about the better part of a month to ship. And water filter orders are taking sometimes weeks to fill because the way the factory works is we produce one type of filter element, then another, and then the packaging and shipping is a process all unto itself. So getting everything from the factory into boxes, into the correct boxes with your particular order, and then getting it labeled, all of that happens in order, in a process. And so if you have an order in, and you start clamoring, and you go to PayPal, And they hold the money, what we're going to do is we're going to send you your money back. And you're not going to be able to order from us anymore. And also in the background, people are starting to communicate so that you won't be able to order from anybody else either. And here's the situation. I've been in business for 20 years with the water filters. I've never missed an order. And being a nervous customer does not help anybody. It doesn't help you. We're not going to take your order and put it in front of somebody else's. And we work at the pace we can work at. And this is just happening since this coronavirus thing came into the... All of a sudden, there's a lot of ordering going on. And so please simply be patient. And if you send something to PayPal and they hold our money, we're simply going to put you at the very end of the line is what's going to happen. And you're going to keep being put at the very end of the line. And that's all that's going to happen. So you're not helping yourself by being a nervous customer and writing to PayPal. So they can't make us work any faster. They're not going to get the water filters out the door any faster. And you're simply going to be put at the end of the line. And that's all we're going to do. So just be patient. Your orders will be shipped, and this is the lead times are growing, not for only for you, but for everybody. And so at any rate, it's good to see the business picking up, but in a lot of cases, I don't know if it's panic buying or what you might call it. I think it's awareness. People are simply becoming aware that, yeah, they need water filtration. And by the way, the filters themselves, the gravity filters and the inline filters, do not remove viruses. However, in the whole house water filter series, the MR5 and MR7s, these are the big ones, these are for the whole house, one of the add-on filters is an ultraviolet. It's called a filter, but it's really just a tube, a stainless steel tube the water goes through, and there's an ultraviolet light in a quartz tube that kills anything that comes into that tube. So bacteria, viruses, whatever, ain't going to pass through there alive. So that's something, and I've been encouraging people for a long time to go with the whole house water filters because they take out all the chemicals, all the toxins, and this is necessary for your good health. Plus, it has that add-on filter that will kill the bacteria and viruses. Any bacteria that does get through the filtration process will be taken care of in the final filter, which is the ultraviolet filter. That's the story. But and not just for me, just for anybody you order from, just please be patient. We're working at capacity, have been working at capacity for quite a long time, and that's a good situation. Our dependencies are not on China. We don't have dependencies on foreign items because the filters are made in our own factory right here in the United States. But there's, just be patient. That's all I can tell you. Please don't be an impatient customer, because everybody, and I'm talking across the board, I was just a guest on the John Moore show. He announced it for some of his products. I was just on the Power Hour yesterday with Daniel Brigman. He announced it to his customers that they're getting, orders in. And Daniel, of course, has the Numana product line, of which I sell Numana food on my webpage. And they're out about 30 days, typically, on shipping, and the orders are getting bigger. And that's happening with mine, too, is that the people don't just order one thing, they order multiple things. Or maybe previously they would have just ordered, a four-pack of filters. Now they're ordering 10. And so the orders are going up, and the congestion is going up. And so this also is, say your products are done and they're sitting on the shelf, then we have a backlog of actually getting them out on the shipping dock, getting them packaged, labeled, coordinated, so because your order might be a traveler, a stainless steel container with two regular filter elements and then, a 10-pack of filter elements along with that. And so that all has to be packaged, coordinated in boxes with the labeling put on, coordinated with UPS, and then it goes out. So all I'm telling you is please be patient out there. All of our orders are in the system. And the only thing you're going to do by complaining to PayPal is you're going to get your order put at the very end of the list. And so I don't think people want that. And we're not going to ship product that we don't have the money for. That's just the way it is. So that's the way, all of the online ordering works. You pay for it, it ships. I don't care who you're dealing with, whether it's Amazon, the biggest companies, or myself, the smallest company like myself, that's the way it works. So we're not going to ship product if you're holding the money or if you have PayPal holding the money. Okay, so I'm sorry I have to waste airtime talking about this, but if you order something online, understand that everybody that I know, everybody in this business that is, say, has a radio show or whatever, they're honest people. They their lifeblood is to sell their products, and I'm in competition with a lot of them. But no matter who you order from, just be patient, please. Don't start writing letters and all of this, because your order is just as important as everybody else's. So if you write a letter to PayPal and make a claim, your order will be put at the very end of the list, because we're not going to ship product if we don't have the money on our end. That's just the way it is. And so, because we have lots of orders, we have lots of people that are patient. So we don't need to be basically, in a sense, it's a form of harassment, because we're providing a service. You cannot go to the store and buy. Daniel Brigman made this point. I'll make this point. You cannot go to the store and buy what I sell. You cannot go to any store in this country, in the United States, or any other country and buy what I sell. You can only get it online. And that's very good. We also save some money because we don't have all that overhead. But as this, the fervor of ordering increases, times are going to increase to ship things. So just please be patient. That's all I'm telling you. And, don't ask for daily updates on your order. Or I'll tell you, There was a guy that put in an order for some new manna food. And he wrote in the next day and he says, "Where's my order?" And then he canceled the order. He still wanted it shipped, but he got the processing, the money processing part to cancel. And he still wanted it shipped. And it's like, no, buddy, that's not the way it works. And, you know, everybody is working on this end. But if you cause a situation where the somebody's holding the money or you get the money back, we're not going to ship your product. Simple as that. So at any rate, I'm just asking people to be patient. It's like standing in an invisible line. You can't see all the other people, and we really can't see all the other people either. So we can't predict when your product is going to hit the shipping dock and actually get registered with UPS. But when it does, and when it's actually in that UPS system, you will get an email, and we will get the email at the same time. We're not going to know ahead of time when it's in the UPS system. And that's the point at which it's in a truck and it's moving. At that point, the product will be on its way to you, and everybody will have a tracking number. We will not have a tracking number any sooner. Okay, so now that I've got that out of the way, I do want to talk about the whole house water filters. The information is on my webpage, jmccsci.com. But anyway, just there's two aspects to this. One is to for a very, very reasonable price, actually. The thing about the whole house water filters is the filter elements last for a very, very long time. We're talking actually years of usage before the filter elements have to be replaced. And the big thing right now, too, is I wanted to comment that this information is starting to come out that the virus, not only this virus, but other viruses, can live for a very long time on human waste. And so the question is, as the waste gets processed in a treatment plant and gets dumped back in a river or through a water system or whatever, all of that leaches down into the ground and gives the possibility that viruses will start to come through the water system. And typically, they're not going to be killed by the horrific chemicals that are being put in there by the city water. Some of them still can get through. And so at any rate, the one level of safety, and this is not going to protect you in all aspects, but one level of safety is to have in your own home, in your own water system, that ultraviolet filter that goes along with the MR5 and the MR7 whole house water filter system. So that's all I'm going to say. You can go to the webpage and just break it down financially. If you buy, say, a gravity water filter and then some filter elements, or you buy an over sink water filter, and then over the course of a couple years, you're going to have the better part of probably $500 in that water filtration system. And it's only for the point of use where you have it either in the kitchen. Some people might have one in the bathroom. Not many people do. But the point that you don't have a water filtration system is in the shower. And these little shower heads that you buy at the big box store, they call it a water filter. You screw it on. Believe me, those. If you know about water filtration, you need what is known as contact time. That's the time that it takes the water to filter through the filter. And a little teeny filter simply doesn't have enough water contact time. And also, there's not enough medium there to extract very much. Whatever they do extract is probably just chlorine, and not all of the other thousands of chemicals, volatile organic chemicals, etc. It's not going to remove those. It may remove a minor amount of lead. It's not going to remove arsenic or fluoride. So the little one you buy and you screw it onto the shower head, that's more for show. It's really not going to do anything except maybe make you think that you have water filtration, but it's not really providing you with good filtration. So you need a big system for the whole house. Anyway, okay, enough of that. But in this time of, a bit of increased consciousness of health and health awareness, but just take a quick look at the financial aspect of this. Say, like the $1,766, I believe, is the MR5, just the MR5 filter by itself. And take that over the course of a 10-year period, that's $170 a year. And, it's just the cost, when you think of the physical protection you get from your family, removing all those chemicals, you couldn't buy even bottled water for that, just to put in the refrigerator and take with you. And that's another thing, too. I encourage people, get yourself a good water bottle, good high-quality water bottle, and take your own filtered water with you. A very good idea. Okay, so enough of that. I've been on two radio shows in the last day talking about coronavirus, something I try and stay away from. There's a tremendous amount of disinformation out there. But the biggest thing I think for people to understand is just, for the time being, avoid public places. The thing I'm worried about, and by the way, I'll repeat this, John Moore said it yesterday. He posted it on his page. It's a letter from Len Horowitz, and it's to the Homeland Security and to the president, basically stating that this is a laboratory-manufactured virus. And, all of the details are there. I've said this before. He can say it with a bit more authority than I can. But once you start seeing these things pass, like the SARS epidemic or pandemic or whatever, these are laboratory-created viruses, and they're put into the public by somebody, is to disrupt basically the world and any good relationship with China. I want to mention also that the factories in China, because I have contacts in China, the factories in China did not shut down. They were offline because of the Chinese New Year, not because of the virus. And so there's a tremendous amount of disinformation floating around, an incredible amount of disinformation floating around because of this virus. The people in China were working, they were going to work, there was a lockdown, and when you see the empty streets in China, yes, there were empty streets in China because the people would go to work and they would go home. And they realized that they had to do this so that they could identify the people that had this virus, isolate it, and get rid of it. And now China is becoming actually a star center for exactly what a country should do. But then you have all of the other countries that are not following a good quarantine protocol, like Germany, like Italy. I could go down a whole laundry list of other countries. So at any rate, but there should be a worldwide effort to shut this thing down, and it could be done within a couple week period so it doesn't continue to affect everything that's going on in the world, business, and all of the other things that go with it. Okay, so I'm not going to go into this virus issue, other than to say, it's a good time to just sit back, relax, and get a good book. It's a time maybe for the family to be together a little more than they used to be, possibly a good thing. Okay, a listener sent in this, and I like this when fans understand my theoretical work regarding the solar system and planet Earth, etc. But this was sent in by a listener that next October 18th, so he was looking ahead a little bit, that Mercury, Earth, and Mars have an electrical alignment. And I reminded him that the other thing involved here is the new moon on the same day. So October 18th, 2020, you have Mercury, Earth, Mars, and the new moon. But remember that when I talk about the instigators of severe weather, it's the new moon passing that counts. Not the new moon, but about 2 days after the new moon. So as it turns out anyway, the new moon in October is going to be the 16th. So that would put the new moon passing around the 18th, which is a little bit prior to this alignment. Now, Mercury moves very quickly. Mars and Earth move relative to each other much more slowly. So what we have there is it's kind of like a double trigger. It's kind of like a double-barreled shotgun, so to speak. There's, first of all, the Mercury alignment on the 20th, which will be Mercury, Earth, and Mars. And then prior to that, about a day, day and a half, would be the new moon passing. So it's kind of like, first of all, the new moon passing triggers electrical discharges, and then there comes Mercury to give it another shot, so to speak. So it's kind of like a very interesting situation where these two trigger mechanisms are like boom, boom, about a day and a half apart. So it's very interesting. And so I wrote back to the person that wrote in and sent me this. And of course, I don't have time to go through all of this. I wish I did. I would have, you know, if I had a graduate student for each one of my theoretical pieces of work, I would have them off tracking this, going off into the future, going in through past events, and making, you know, correlations potentially to other events like earthquakes or hurricanes, tornado systems, weather systems, etc. But anyway, that's something that'll come along in those in October. Hopefully, they'll remind me about of this particular alignment, and I'll make some comments as that time frame approaches. Okay, another quick comment here. I've been watching international monetary exchange rates lately, and wow, are they fluctuating just incredibly. What's very strange is that the dollar continues to fall compared to the euro, but that's the only monetary system that seems to be edging out the dollar. And it seems really strange because Europe is not doing that well. That they would be competing against the U.S. dollar. England, in spite of Brexit, is holding its own against the U.S. dollar, but you go to almost any other country and the dollar is just skyrocketing in value compared to the other foreign currencies. Whether you go to India or South America or the Middle East or wherever, the typical second and third world currencies are falling drastically in value, and I'm sure it's a direct result of this virus issue, but it just calls out the fact that the international monetary exchange rates are false. They're not based on real value. They're based on perceived values. So, and also the thing I've criticized, not only myself, but other people, that the stock market is based on people making money, basically making gains, based on short-term fluctuations in the value of stocks. So if you had stocks the way they should be, with long-term stable value, then there would be no rise and fall of the stock market, and something like the virus issue would not cause any kind of fluctuation in the stock market at all. Because people would be in it for the long run, they're in it for the long haul, they're not looking for that minute-by-minute gain or loss or short sell or whatever it is. They're not making money off the rapid fluctuations in the valuation of stocks. And that, of course, allows the big money people to come in and do what they did a week ago, where they just sell off on a Monday morning, and then by the end of the week, come next Monday, they buy it all back, and there's been an exchange literally of a couple trillion dollars that have changed hands because of nothing, not because there's more value in the companies that are issuing stocks, not because there's more value in the country, not because people produced better products, But some people, a very small group of people, made divided up amongst themselves, this very small group of people, a couple $1 trillion simply because the fluctuation in the valuation of stocks based on this virus thing. That's, why should anybody make money in that level based on fluctuation in stock prices because of a temporary, what certainly appears to be a temporary issue that is probably being handled very nicely on the short-term basis. We can all disagree on what's been done as far as the virus, or is it good or bad or sufficient or insufficient, or did they spend enough money or not spend enough money? You could argue all day about that. But the bottom line is it should not affect the stock market if we have a real stock market. So it just goes to prove we don't have a real stock market. We do not have a stock market that really shows the value of the economy. The stock market should be based on the value of products and products made, and little bumps like this on a week or 2 week basis should have no effect on it at all. It should not have the any kind of effect on, say, the auto industry or the manufacturing of sporting goods equipment or anything else. It should be simply dependent on the quality of the products, the fact that people are employed, the people who are employed go out and buy cars and sporting goods equipment and furniture for their house, etc. And that's what drives the economy, not the idea that there was rapid fluctuation in the stock market due to a perceived issue with a man-made virus that's introduced into China. So anyway, absolutely insane. Okay, I'm going to turn back to scientific issues. I'm not going to waste my show time talking about coronavirus and all of this, other than just take it easy, stay home, relax, get a good book, maybe watch some movies that you wanted to watch. But apart from that, I want to talk about heat exchange. I want to talk about the process of using heat to create energy. And I've talked about this before. I have a very nice video on my webpage where I show a coal train. There's two sets of tracks, and there's a coal train coming and a coal train going. The one that's, I think that's is coming is empty, and the one that's going away is full, or vice versa. I don't remember offhand. But that's not important. But what happens is if you look at this coal train, thousands of coal cars in a line being pulled by a whole series of steam engines, of diesel engines. If you take 100 of those train cars and you look at the amount of energy that's produced when that coal is burned at the power plant, only 20 of those cars actually turn into useful energy. The other 80 of those 100 cars, the other 80 goes up as heat right into the atmosphere right now. And of course, that's one of the big issues with the so-called climate change. People and experts, etc., on both sides of the aisle on that issue, that nobody talks about direct heating of the atmosphere. That heat, those 80 train cars worth of fuel are being burned and go right up the smokestack, right into the atmosphere right now. Far more heating than the alleged greenhouse effect due to carbon dioxide. But what I want to discuss here is the idea that, for example, let's look at something like thorium. There's a lot of people who say, oh, well, thorium is the solution, or fusion is the solution to all our energy needs. Well, the problem is you're still taking an inert material, and you're what you're doing is taking an inert material and creating heat. And from that heat, because of something known as the Carnot cycle, you are extracting a certain amount of energy. But the Carnot cycle has a limit, and it's around a little bit above 30%. So, but when you take all the other inefficiencies and you add them together, you end up at about 20%. So anytime somebody comes up to you and says, let's try this energy source as the solution to all of our energy problems, if it creates heat, then it follows the Carnot cycle, and most of that energy that you're creating, most of that heat that you're creating, goes directly into the atmosphere. Okay, so something that most people don't realize is that solar panels fit in that same category. The solar panel absorbs sunlight. The sunlight hits the solar panel, and people think, oh, it's converting it to electricity. The electricity goes to batteries or goes to the grid and produces energy, and isn't that great? The only problem is that only about 20% of the sunlight that hits that solar panel is being converted to electricity. They're around 20% efficient. On a warm day in a California afternoon with solar panels on the house, they degrade by 2 to 3, possibly 4 degrees, because of the high temperature. And the other thing is that, okay, so let's be generous and say that 20% of the sunlight is converted into electricity. The other 80%, what happens to that? Well, there's only one place for it to go, and that's up into the atmosphere. So solar panels are not any better than burning coal or natural gas or nuclear or thorium or fusion, hydrogen fusion or whatever. All of these are heat processes, and solar panels fit into that same category. So solar panels are not green. Solar panels kill birds because if a bird flies over one of those big expanses of solar panels, the bird dies. And so the people that work on maintain these systems go out into the countryside, and there are dead birds. It kills all of the wildlife underneath the solar panels. So they're in terms of ecology, the solar panels are extremely damaging, not to mention that they're very difficult to recycle. So the point I'm trying to get at here is that wind and hydro, it turns out, are two natural forms of energy, and they're the only forms of energy that do not create heat as a byproduct, as part of the process of creating the energy. Wind energy, then again, you have to understand that the three-blade wind turbines do not convert wind to energy very efficiently. They're horrifically inefficient. The wind just blows right through them. It's like putting your, like, take your three fingers and put them up to the wind. Your three fingers would convert more energy to electricity than those stupid little skinny three blades. But be that as it may, wind, even though it's been poorly used up till now, wind and hydro are the only forms of energy that we know about that do not create heat as part of the process of creating energy. And so, okay, and most of the ones that, in fact, all of the ones, forms of energy that are used, including solar, are at that about 20% range. In other words, about 80% of the energy from whatever the source. In the case of solar panels, it's energy from the sun. 80% of that goes right into the atmosphere as heat. Nobody wants to talk about that. You know, the people with the Green New Deal, solar panels are not green. And countries are starting to realize this en masse. But if you can get a politician to vote for something and he thinks he's being, you know, he's going to get a few votes, they'll put anything through under the sun. And that's why solar panels continue to be subsidized and sold. But solar panels, let me repeat, make no mistake about it, solar panels create as much heat as burning nuclear, coal, natural gas, thorium, hydrogen fusion, deuterium fusion, or whatever process you might come up with. Solar panels are equally bad as any of these other processes. But then, okay, so that leaves us with solar and hydro. But hydro is, there's a couple reasons why hydro will not solve our energy problems. Back in the 30s, hydro was a very good solution with the Tennessee Valley Authority making dams and putting electricity into a lot of those regions around the southeastern United States. Some of the other big dams, of course, the Hoover Dam, being able to produce at that time around 2.5 gigawatts of energy, a lot of energy coming from that dam. But the last two times I've been out there to visit, that Lake Mead was dry, bone dry. You see those big towers where the water would spill down in and spill down through the tubes and create electricity. So hydro has its problems also. The other issue with hydro is that there are dams that are failing. They have a given lifetime, and once that lifetime is over, you have a tremendous cost. They say that the cement in the inside of the Hoover Dam is still curing. That's how long it takes. That's how the amount of cement there is unbelievable. You could not build the Hoover Dam by any standards today. It could only take place back in the Depression days when labor was cheap and materials were cheap and you could produce that much cement and pour it into a form. They had to pour it continuously. Once they started pouring, that had to be continuously, the cement had to continue pouring into there. China is building some immense hydro dams, and they're having a lot of problems with cracking, with the bases. And in other countries, there's a lot of third world countries where the hydro dams are having serious problems with the footings because they're based, if you're familiar with a lot of, especially Latin American countries or countries in the tropics, the volcanic material that they're based on, once that gets wet, it becomes like a slurry. It becomes like wet mud, and the foundational strength just isn't there anymore. And of course, a dam is water. it's water right up to the dam, and so there are places where dam failures are a real issue. And dam failures, especially when it's raining, there's a lot of pressure. The water's coming over the dam. The spillway cannot handle the amount of water. And also, just from an ecological point of view, nobody is considering building dams anymore. Canada has tremendous amount of hydroelectric, some of it selling to the United States. And there's a quagmire in itself, in that Canada produces all of this electricity using hydro dams and then sells it to the United States, and then put in all of these three-blade wind turbines that don't work, especially around the Great Lakes, and then charge their residents tremendously high prices for electricity while subsidizing three-blade wind turbines that don't work, that don't produce any electricity. So there are associations in Canada that are trying to stop the installation of any more three-blade wind turbines. But you never hear about that. It's amazing the amount of control the news media has to silence any efforts. And there again, that just shows you that not only the control of the news media, but what things do they decide at a very high level to block from you, the public, from seeing. There are some web pages that daily discuss these issues, but they're not mainstream. They're something that you really have to go look for, and once you start realizing this giant pig with lipstick that is the three-blade wind turbine, you have to come to the only logical conclusion that these were invented to put out there to basically make a pretend effort to try and resolve the world energy problem, when everybody doing this knew all along that these things could never work. I mean, you'd have to be a complete idiot to look at those three little sticks and imagine that somehow this thing would work.
I was talking to a colleague the other day about the three-blade wind turbines, and there's a whole long series of points that I bring up when I talk about these, but one of the most telling is that there are processes in nature that are reversible. And for example, let me think of a process in nature that's reversible. Okay, here's a good one. Here's a simple one that anybody can understand. It's a waterfall. And for example, or in a sense, like a hydro dam also, if the water goes over the waterfall and falls down, that releases a certain amount of energy. If you take a bucket and you take that water and you move it back up, or some other means, a pipe, a pump, whatever you choose, and you pump it back up, then that water can fall back down again, and that process in that respect is reversible. Because the water falls down, you put it back up, it falls back down. It's a reversible process. So you can store the energy again by just taking that water and putting it up into the above the waterfall, and when it falls over, it will you can get back that same amount of energy minus a little bit of loss. Okay, so that's one concept. But a propeller is not a reversible process. There are things in nature which are not reversible. For example, when a tree grows, it has leaves that gather energy from the sun. Those leaves take that energy and they put it into the tree, which makes wood. But that's not a reversible process. Once the leaves have finished with their lifetime, they fall off and new leaves grow, and that process continues. But there's no way to take the energy that's somehow stored in the wood and push it back into the leaves. It's not a reversible process. You can reverse the energy by taking the wood and burning it, but that's another process. That's a totally different process. But okay, let's take a look at propellers. Propellers were designed, and for very good reason, to take standing still air, and you spin the propeller very fast, very fast, and it takes the air and it blows it backwards, and that moving the air in a column of air in a certain direction, you strap that onto an airplane or some type of vehicle with wheels. There are vehicles that have propellers, or another good example is on the water. These skiffs that they run around the Everglades in. It's a flat bottom boat with a propeller on the back. That is, the propeller is taking still air and moving it very fast, moving it back in a single direction and then pushing forward. But that process is not reversible. In other words, imagine you took a very high speed, high velocity column of wind and you put it onto a propeller. You would not get back the same amount of energy that you put into it. It would basically be an extremely inefficient process. Now, let's take that same column of wind and we're going to slow it down. It's not going to be 100 mile an hour or 150 mile an hour wind. It's going to be a 20 mile an hour wind, a very low velocity wind column. And you're going to take that same set of props, propellers, and try and somehow garner energy from that. It doesn't work. Propellers are not reversible. The use of a propeller, or the concept, or the theoretical concept of a propeller is not reversible. It is not a reversible process. And that's what they're trying to do with the three-blade wind turbine. They're trying to take a mild or low velocity column of wind and somehow turn it into energy. And this goes into, there's something I've talked about before in this show. It's called the Betz limit. And people actually teach this at the university level in engineering and physics class, not really understanding that. And let me just explain this. I'll explain the root of the what's known as the Betz limit. The Betz limit is for hydrodynamically, they're called Newtonian fluids that are non-compressible. In other words, water, or say hydraulic fluid, or some kind of Newtonian fluid. And Newtonian fluid is something that is, say, in a form of a liquid. Air is a form of Newtonian fluid. But air is compressible. Water, in the traditional sense at low velocity, is non-compressible fluid. Just, and that's why we don't use air, for example, in hydraulics. You do not have a hydraulic system with air in it. In fact, you don't want air in your hydraulic system. If you have air in your hydraulic system, it doesn't work. And so by definition, air is a compressible fluid, and it doesn't meet the criteria for the Betz limit. The Betz limit works as follows. You take a column of moving fluid that is non-compressible, so not air, water, hydraulic fluid, whatever. And what happens is you try and extract energy from that column of fluid, then as you extract kinetic energy, the fluid slows down. So you're changing kinetic energy into a rotational energy, and that's typically the way this comes out. And if you look at the flanged turbine is housed in, for example, a hydro dam, it expands outward. So as the fluid slows down, as the water slows down, then it expands out, and it needs a bigger pipe for the same to allow the water that's coming behind to keep moving at the same velocity. If you had a pipe of the same diameter, then the water slowing down would put a back pressure on the water that's coming down the tube, and it would slow the process down. And this is the basis for what is known as the Betz limit. So the Betz limit applies to hydro dams, or a fluid that's flowing in a contained column in a pipe, for example. And it could be hydraulic fluid, it could be water, it could be some other form of liquid that is non-compressible. It does not apply to anything dealing with air. But all of the ivory tower morons that teach engineering in the country, the United States, and around the world use the Betz limit as some kind of a theoretical limit of wind turbine systems. It's totally incorrect. And all you've got to do is read the basic criteria for the Betz limit. It has to be a non-compressible fluid. Air is not a non-compressible fluid. Air is a compressible fluid. And it is a kinetic energy transfer. And wind turbines are neither one of those. So what a bunch of complete morons running around using something that doesn't make any sense, thinking that they're extracting energy based on a theoretical model. And so anyway, in realizing this, when I designed the wing generator, for example, I realized that these morons are using completely false theoretical structure for making decisions. And the end result is that if you look at a three-blade wind turbine, the wind just blows right through it. Now, somebody used a very good example. Take those three little sticks and put them on a sailboat and see how far your sailboat goes. It's not going to go anywhere. Okay, so enough of that. But getting back to the idea that wind is the best form of energy to power our needs. You've heard the expression that what happens if the wind is not blowing? Well, the answer is that the wind is always blowing somewhere. If it's not blowing over there, it's blowing over there. If it's not blowing over there, it's blowing over there. And so the sum total of wind energy over an expansive area like the United States is a constant. And so if you have your wind system set up and in excess of the amount of energy that you need, you can power the entire nation based on wind. So it turns out that of the two sources of energy, wind and hydro dams, of the two sources of energy, wind is the one that is the most easily garnished. It is the one that is most easily converted to energy. Hydro dams destroy tremendous amounts of acreage of land, far more for the amount of energy they produce than even solar panels or three-blade wind turbines. They're horrifically damaging. So in that respect, nobody is even considering building more hydro dams because land is becoming more valuable and land usage is becoming more valuable. And then also you have the issue that you have droughts. But getting back to the idea of wind, we know where the wind blows. We know where the locations of constant wind are located. And every day when you wake up in the morning, guess what? The sun, which is the energy source, and it's not the heat of the sun, it's the electrical conditions of the sun are what provides our wind. So it's really it's a form of taking electrical energy from the solar wind, which drives our wind systems on this planet, and converting it to electricity. And when the electricity gets used, it goes off in the form of wind again. It goes back into the system. And so wind is the solution. Wind is the solution for all of our energy needs. And then the question is there enough wind? And the answer is yes. Now, I heard something rather comical, that if you have wind turbines, they will make the Earth spin in the opposite direction. In other words, all of the wind turbines would cause a torque on the Earth and cause the Earth to start turning off of its axis. Well, the answer to that is very simple. You put 50% of the wind turbines turning in one direction, and you put 50% of the wind turbines turning in the other direction, and then there's no net torque on the Earth, if you're really worried about that. It's something that I really wouldn't worry about. I don't think we're going to send the Earth spinning off into outer space because of the use of wind turbines. But if it's really a concern of yours, that's how you solve it. Okay, so I'm going to spend the last few minutes of the show tonight talking about the items in the product line. And once again, I encourage people to start ordering now for example, the Numana food, understanding that we're about 30 days out on shipping. And this is going to get worse in the future. So the people that order now will be the lucky ones. The same with the water filters. I would suggest that right now, I'll tell you something about the whole house water filters. We have some in stock. And it takes a while to get those packaged up, get them to the shipping dock, get the labeling put on them, etc. But the first people to get the orders in for the MR5 or MR7 whole house water filters will get them much sooner than if you wait possibly a week or two. So I would encourage you to take a look at those. Go to the secure web ordering page and put in an order for the MR5 or MR7. And I would highly recommend ordering an extra set of filter elements with it, and then also especially the ultraviolet filter. I would not want to order an MR5 or an MR7 without that ultraviolet filter as an add-on. And put in your order. As I said, we've got some in stock. And even if you put in an order today, it might be a number of weeks until it actually works its way off the shelf through the packaging and into shipping. And then a day or two after that, once it's in the UPS system, then you get a tracking email, as I was saying in the beginning. So I would encourage you, if you've been thinking about ordering an MR5 or 7 whole house water filter, to do that. And to do it soon, because the longer you wait to order anything, and this includes the water filter elements. By the way, I still have 15% off and free shipping on the filter elements. Those we're selling more and more every day. And so the lead time on those is going to grow. So if you're serious about getting water filter elements, the best ones on the planet, then I would put in my order right now. And then, like I say, sit back and be patient. Please don't send us an email every other day, where's my order, where's my order, please. Because we do get to these, we will ship them, and literally we can't uh, foresee all of the steps and all of the other orders processing and being put into shipping and being shipped out. It's impossible for us to give you some kind of date when we will ship your product, other than we will get to it as fast as we can. Believe me, we're working as hard as we can every day. Everybody is very conscious of, actually, you know, we're all healthy. We're all conscious of what's going on the planet these days. But it's going to take any order that's put in today. It's going to take a little while to get shipped. So, and remember that if you go and complain to somebody and they pull the money, we'll just put you at the end of the line, because there's a lot of people who would rather take your place, believe me, and then you can go to the end of the line and wait. And that's the way it just has to be. So you're waiting in an invisible line. We don't really know all the characteristics of that invisible line either. And when your product gets in line to be shipped, believe me, we will have it packaged as fast as we can and shipped out. So also, I just want to remind you that all of the products that are on my page are products that are available for distribution. So that's the shipping containers, the shipping container buildings, constructed from shipping containers where we can cut doors and windows at the factory and reinforce them. All of the information is there. And then also, the wing generator, write in an email to the email address on the webpage, jmccsci.com. Go there for the email address. And just write in an email, wing. Also, the study that send in your zip code and your water provider, municipal water company that's on your water bill. Send those two pieces of information and just say water study or water test. And I will dig into the databases that are provided, the national databases, and I can tell you what's really in your water. That's not what your city or municipal water supplier is going to tell you. They're going to tell you simply that they comply with federal standards, which is a pile of you know what. So make sure you do that. And we're a little bit behind on that. We're going back in time also. We missed some previous time segments where I was gone. And so we're going back and cleaning up those email lists and getting all those water studies out. So if you emailed in and you did not hear back yet, just be patient. We'll be sending those out. And I encourage everybody to look at the whole house water filters. That is really the ticket, I mean, for your future health. Plus, they have the ultraviolet filter as an option, which will take care of bacteria and viruses that get through the filtration process. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.